May it please the court, good afternoon. My name is Tom Seaman. I'm practice with the law firm of Seaman and Chambers. We represent American National Property and Casualty Company. We've referred to our client throughout the briefing, and I will refer to him today as ANPAC. This case involves a rather lengthy past, including several trips to the Court of Appeals, but the appeal that's before the court today involves an order that the trial court entered upon remand from a prior appeal. That prior appeal was in a case 08-CA-1853. And in remanding the case to the trial court, the Court of Appeals indicated that the trial court had imposed a sanction or a penalty of denial of insurance coverage in its order of judgment, and had done so without understanding, or at least had done so assuming that that was a remedy that was required by the Colorado fraudulent or insurance fraud statute. So the remand order from the Court of Appeals indicated that the trial court should exercise its discretion and determine the appropriate remedy. The remedy that the trial court had entered was part of a declaratory judgment, and in that declaratory judgment the court found that the occurrence of insurance fraud warranted a denial of coverage, but only as to one of the two claims for no-fault benefits, the claim for wage loss. And the court, in that same judgment order, had allowed an award of PIP benefits for medical expenses. And in fact, it found or trebled those damages based upon a willful and wanton finding by the jury.
Mr. Seaman, you don't contend, do you, that the trial court was barred from reconsidering its decision to void insurance coverage on the remand?
We do, Your Honor. Our contention, and
it's, but you just got through saying that on the remand that the Court of Appeals said the trial court had the discretion to make that determination.
That's true, Your Honor, but we think that the discretion was based upon an erroneous conclusion by the Court of Appeals, and that was that the trial court's decision to void the policy was based on an erroneous belief by the trial court that it was required to enter that relief based upon the statute.
But that's not what the remand order said. The remand order said the trial court may, in its discretion, reconsider this. And so when you say on page 13 of your brief, consequently, when the case was remanded back to the trial court, it should not have reconsidered its decision to void insurance coverage based on plaintiff's fraud. It had every right to do so, had the discretion to do that, one way or the other.
Our contention, Your Honor, is that the court had that right or that discretion if the trial court did not already exercise its discretion when it originally ordered that the appropriate remedy or relief was a denial of coverage. The court knew or had before it all of the briefing and all the argument that had gone on before that leading up to the declaratory judgment order.
Well, sorry to interrupt, but let me see if I get it. You just want us to change the last division's opinion?
No, I want the court to enforce the law of the case doctrine unless the court were to find one of the three exceptions of the law of the case doctrine. And the law of the case we contend in this case was established when the court in its...
Which court?
The trial court in its April 2010 order found that based upon the jury's finding of insurance fraud that the proper remedy was...
But the trial... Let me just see if I track this. The trial court's judgment was reversed.
Trial court's judgment was reversed. Yeah, on a couple of issues.
So how does law of the case apply if it was reversed?
Because the law of the case with regard to the appropriate remedy to be imposed as a result of the jury's finding of insurance fraud, we believe was established in the court's April 2010 order. The court considered all the evidence, including the finding of that the jury made of insurance fraud. And the court, in that order, discussed the fact that there were several remedies that were possible based upon insurance fraud. They even indicated that the statute allowed different remedies for the court to consider. The one they imposed, the one the trial court imposed, was a denial of coverage. Our contention is that the trial court then erred by only applying that denial to one of the TIP claims and not the other, based upon a finding that there was a waiver of a defense of insurance fraud. On appeal, the Court of Appeals said there was no waiver of that defense. So we think that on remand, unless the trial court, looking at this on remand, agreed and decided that the court had erroneously found or ruled on the basis that the trial court did not think it had any discretion and had to order a denial of coverage. Unless that finding is made at the trial court level on remand, then we think the law of the case was what was established in that April 30th order, and that the appropriate remedy for insurance fraud should have been a denial of coverage, which would then be applied not only to the wage loss claim, but also to the claim for medical expenses based upon the ruling on appeal that the waiver of the defense of insurance fraud had not occurred.
Counsel, didn't the Court of Appeals rule in that same opinion that the trial court had misunderstood the statute and thought that it had no discretion with regard to determining the sanction?
That is part of the Court of Appeals.
And did you appeal that decision?
No.
Did you file a petition for rehearing?
We did not. We thought that...
Aren't our hands bound then at this point to go with that decision? How can we disregard that decision?
Well, the way that the case went back to the trial court, Your Honor, was the trial court to basically redo or redecide, you know, make the same decision that it had made originally. And that's, I mean, the reason we didn't file a further appeal or petition for cert is that we had every reason to anticipate that the trial court, which had exercised its discretion under the statute and made it clear in its order that it was doing so, discussed other remedies that were available, made it clear why it was choosing the remedy it did, which was denial of coverage. AMPAC had every reason to believe that on remand, that the only change or fix that the trial court would do would be as to the application of its denial order to the claim for medical expenses. There was no reason to expect the court to do a 180-degree turnaround, which is what ended up happening.
But other than the fact that the court held, the Court of Appeals held, right, that they had labored under the misunderstanding that it did not have discretion, and therefore it remanded the case to the trial court to exercise its discretion rather than to operate on the assumption that it had no choice but to issue the
That was the ruling in the Court of Appeals. The specific language was the trial court's decision to void the policy was based on its belief that it was required to do so, and it was an erroneous application of the law. I don't think that the trial court erroneously applied the law at all, and we fully.
But what difference does that make if the Court of Appeals, and obviously the Court of Appeals may well have made a mistake on that prior decision, and we don't have to we can't decide that now. You had the opportunity to appeal that. Aren't our hands now tied? We have to live with under the law of the case.
Not
that decision.
Excuse me. I apologize. Not if this court agrees that the law of the case, which was established in the April 2010 order, should continue to be binding in the case unless one of the three rare exceptions. There wasn't any new evidence or substantially different evidence. We didn't take any more evidence. So that exception to the law of the case doctrine wouldn't apply. The controlling legal authority had not changed at all, and that's the Giampapa case that was cited in the appellee's brief. That doesn't apply, and there's not any decision that was clearly erroneous that would result in manifest injustice. Unless one of those exceptions apply, the law of the case is established by the trial court in its April 2010 order should be controlled. The court
isn't another exception when the trial court's decision is overruled by a higher court?
Yes, but I think you need to temper or understand what overruled means. The court didn't say that the Court of Appeals didn't say that the trial court had made a mistake. The Court of Appeals said that the trial court may have misunderstood the law in terms of reaching the decision it reached, and it may have thought, or the Court of Appeals thought, that it did believe that it had no discretion and that it had to order a denial of coverage under both the insurance fraud statute and the notice provision in the policy. This trial court had already addressed those issues.
Well, let me ask you, if you lay aside the law of the case argument that you have, do you have any basis for saying that the trial court abused its discretion with its decision that's now on appeal?
I think I do, but you know, I don't think we should get to that. But I mean, another thing that happened on remand, not only the 180 degree, or what I call 180 degree turnaround in terms of the remedy for insurance fraud, but for the first time, the trial court indicated that because ANPAC had paid some benefits under its insurance policy, that constituted a waiver of its right to assert the defense of insurance fraud. That issue was never briefed. It was never argued before the trial court. It really came out of the blue in terms of the opinion that came from the trial court following remand. So not only did the court say, well, we're no longer going to apply the remedy of denial of coverage, even though the court had analyzed it and decided that that was the appropriate remedy based on the jury's finding, the court goes on and on remand and says, in addition, ANPAC paid some benefits under this policy, and so that constitutes a waiver of that defense or a waiver of its position regarding denial of coverage, an issue that was never before argued before that court or any court. So I think actually what happened, or from our perspective anyway, ANPAC got blindsided when we went back to the trial court. As far as the choice to go back to the trial court versus up the ladder, say, to the Colorado Supreme Court, given the status of the case and the state of the court's consideration of those remedies, and particularly the fact that the trial court had indicated in entering its April 2010 order that it was aware of the variety of remedies that were available, plaintiffs had certainly argued and briefed that for the trial court. There was no reason for ANPAC to anticipate that the court was going to do a complete reversal of that, or add another element, which was the waiver argument. And the Court of Appeals had already rejected one waiver argument and indicated that the defense of insurance fraud had not been waived by ANPAC. The other issue that we have in this appeal is the issue that had been raised previously on appeal, and that is the fact, this goes all the way back to the trial of the case, but ANPAC had asserted as an affirmative defense insurance fraud. The court rejected an instruction or would not instruct the jury with regard to insurance fraud. And in doing so, what the trial court said is the jury has to decide whether there's a fraudulent insurance act under the statute. Based upon that finding, the court will deal with the issue of insurance fraud in entering a declaratory judgment.
Excuse me, counsel, is that issue within the remand order from the Court of Appeals?
It was not. It was not something that...
Was it something you had appealed on the prior appeal?
Yes, it was appealed previously. It was argued, it wasn't...
But once again, you didn't seek certiorari when they didn't rule your way on that issue, right?
No, and again, thinking that if we went back to the trial court, which had already addressed the issue with regard to the appropriate remedy and the discretion that the court had, that would be probably the least complicated, least expensive route to take in terms of getting a favorable ruling, not only on the wage loss claim, but also on the medical expense claim. I would like to save a minute and a half or a minute and 20, whatever I have left for rebuttal, if that's okay. Thank you.
My name is Bruce Rohde of Easton Rohde, number 11465. May it please the court, I would characterize what's happened here as be careful what you wish for. ANPAC was successful in getting its remand from the previous appeal such that the trial court revisited the coverage issues and exercised its discretion in determining again whether there'd be coverage for wage and medical benefits. And in compliance with this court's mandate, and in the exercise of that discretion, found against ANPAC. And when I read ANPAC's opening brief, honestly, I was incredulous. And I dare say that the panel that rendered the decision in the previous appeal would be too. The brief, and AMPAC argues now, is replete with the linchpin of its argument, which is this court erred. This court erred in its previous decision directing the trial court to exercise its discretion, finding it had abused its discretion by failing to exercise its discretion. First of all, this has not been mentioned, but as we mentioned in our brief, that argument was not raised on remand in the trial court. The trial court was not invited to visit this law of the case doctrine. Collateral estoppel was argued, res judicata was argued on remand, but not law of the case. But here we are. What AMPAC proposes to do turns the mandate rule, the strongest and purest form of law of the case, on its head. The trial court had no discretion under the mandate rule but to follow this court's mandate, and it did. It's been suggested that this court was mistaken when it concluded that the trial court believed that it did not have discretion. I disagree with that. If that were the case, the trial court would not have said the things in its order that I have quoted on page 19 of our brief. The appellate court found this court's conclusion that it was required to void the policy. It cited its own conclusion. If the trial court believed that the appellate court was mistaken, it certainly would have said so. No, this court was correct that the trial court mistakenly believed that it had no discretion.
Mr. Rohde, did AMPAC take the position before the second appeal? I mean, there's been three appeals, right? We're on the third appeal.
Yes,
before the second appeal. Did they take the position that the court had discretion to choose among sanctions, or did it take the position that the court was required to avoid the policy?
It took the position and maintained it most strenuously that it had no discretion. And we argued that it did have discretion. And
so that was a hotly contested issue?
Hotly contested issue. The court, under the law of the case, did have discretion to revisit its own previous rulings, while under the mandate rule, it had no discretion but to follow this court's ruling. It could change its mind, so to speak. And finally, AMPAC did not argue in its opening brief here that the trial court abused its discretion in considering the equities. Nevertheless, we welcome the chance to address those equities ourselves, and in our brief you see that we've laid out at least seven good reasons why the court did what it did. But in all sincerity, I've never done this in my years of practice since 1981, argued for attorney's fees and double costs. But this is frivolous.
Counsel, you made that request in your brief, but you didn't comply with the rule by providing a rationale for why you want to do it. I think it was like a one-liner, basically.
It was a one-liner. I think the merits, or the lack thereof, their decision speak for themselves. The jury instruction, that was not raised in the first appeal either. And that's why it wasn't in the scope of the remand, as you noted, Judge Miller. In their reply brief, AMPAC points out that whether the jury was properly instructed on the fraud declaratory judgment claim in case number one and with respect to the fraud defense in case number two was raised as an issue in the notice of appeal. And it was, but as this court is well aware, that notice is only advisory. If it weren't, just think what would happen. one would raise every argument one could think of in the notice of appeal, argue a few the first time around, experience the remand, and then take the other issues up the next time around. Well, that's not the way it works. The jury instruction issue raised in this appeal was not raised previously, and that's why that argument is frivolous. If the court were to visit the jury instruction issue and apply the D.R. Horton factors, at least that's one lead case in which this court addressed those factors, it should reject their argument anyway. As we've pointed out in our brief, the issue first, there's three factors that, as this court knows, that are customarily considered. Was the right preserved? Were the instructions as a whole erroneous? And number three, was any mistake harmless? Was there substantially prejudicial error? Well, we maintain that the issue is not properly preserved because simply the one or more of you who have read the record see simply asking that the affirmative defense of fraud be tacked on to instruction number 29 is an insufficient tender. Something more was required in order to explain to the jury the law properly, to explain that you may award damages on the fraud claim in the first case, although that may affect what the court does with respect to the declaratory judgment claim in the first case. Fraud is a defense in the second case, but it is not a complete defense. And if you find fraud with respect to the MedPay issues in the second case, the court may, but is not required to, void coverage. I don't think that ANPAC even came close to making such a tender. I think the instructions given as a whole were not erroneous. And importantly, I think any possible mistake in this area is harmless because the court in the end visited with full vigor the appropriate remedy for fraud in both cases. That's what the remand was all about. So I think ANPAC's argument with respect to the jury instructions fails on all three counts. I've got to say for my client, this case arises from a 1999 auto accident. He's been denied his wage benefits on his breach of contract claim and his medical benefits that were found to have been denied him. This is medical benefits for neck surgery. He went back to England to have that surgery, finally. Medical benefits that were denied after the jury found that ANPAC willfully and wantonly disregarded his rights and feelings. It's been 14 years now. He won't get a penny of his attorney's fees unless this court awards some. Maybe all that's not pertinent to the legal issues that we're discussing now. Maybe it doesn't matter, or maybe it does.
Your Honor, with regard to the issue of insurance fraud as a defense, the quote on page 12 of our reply brief from the court should give the court a clear picture of how the trial court viewed this. And what the trial judge said is that there's no legal issue, therefore, there's no defense that they, meaning the jury, are deciding. Even if they find he fraudulently endorsed the check, it doesn't have a legal consequence, if you will. It has a legal consequence to me, meaning the court, with regard to your declaratory judgment counterclaim. Mr. Rohde makes an impassioned plea on behalf of his client in terms of not having been compensated for his wage loss. But let's not lose sight of the fact that Mr. O'Hanlon committed insurance fraud. The jury found that to be true. But what the jury was not allowed to do is apply that finding in any meaningful way to defeat the claims that Mr. O'Hanlon was making against ANPAC, and that's because they didn't have an instruction allowing them to consider the defense of insurance fraud.
But you didn't appeal that instruction.
I'm sorry?
But you didn't appeal that issue.
No. ANPAC did not argue, and I disagree with Mr. Rohde when he says that ANPAC's argument was that the court had no discretion under either the statute or the notice provision, the insurance policy. This was fully briefed and argued to the trial court. The court knew and was aware of the fact that...
I see that you're out of time.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.